Good afternoon to Daniel Pomerantz. How are you, Daniel?
Great, how are you doing?
All right, thank you. Thank you so much for standing in for Simon. Can we talk about Newsweek?
My pleasure.
What did Newsweek do?
Newsweek, well, you know, there's a particular writer at Newsweek. His name is Tom O'Connor. He just loves to jump on anything related to Israel. He's what we call a laptop journalist. He doesn't come here. He doesn't have sources here. He doesn't know anything about here. Almost everything he writes is just a regurgitation of something he read in some other news source. So what happened was there was a small fire that broke out in a mosque that is near the Al-Aqsa Mosque, but not actually in it. And he wrote this big headline that says, "As the Notre Dame Cathedral burns, so does the Al-Aqsa Mosque," as if there was some sort of inferno there. It was really a horribly tasteless comparison. It was a small fire that was put out almost immediately. It caused no damage to people or property, and he was comparing it to an event that really impacts a lot of people in a very deep way. So that in itself was tasteless, and it wasn't even in the Al-Aqsa Mosque at all, but in the Al-Murani Mosque nearby, which actually was built in 1996, and the way it was built was when the Waqf, which is the Jordanian administrative body that administers the Muslim sites on the Temple Mount, they violated the architectural law of Israel by breaking into a protected architectural site and bulldozing hundreds of tons of soil that archaeologists believe contains Jewish artifacts going back 3,000 years, and built a mosque on it. And that was what had the small fire. Of course, none of that context made Tom O'Connor's article, so we put together a critique to make sure that his followers and readers know about his irresponsible journalism.
How many people do you think care?
Care about the Al-Aqsa Mosque or about Notre Dame?
About the truth.
Well, I think a lot of people care about the truth. They are just careless about what they consider to be true. I think when people have an agenda, they tend to feel very strongly about it, and they look for things that support their agenda and convince themselves that that is the truth. And, you know, there may be people who really feel like, wow, I want to believe that the Muslim world was suffering now just as the Christian world was suffering. And they'll take the facts. There really was a fire in a mosque. But then they'll be willing to believe it in a way that fits the worldview they want to believe in. I don't think you'll ever meet anybody who says, oh, yeah, I don't care about the truth. Of course, they may be lying. There's an irony to think about there. Certainly, there are some people who are, in fact, opportunistic. Some people who are anti-Semitic, some people who are simply naive, some people who just want to sell newspapers and get clickbait online. And those are people who really will take liberties with the truth knowingly. But it's among the readers. I think people believe they believe in the truth, even though sometimes they don't really.
And you know what? Sometimes that it comes from a very caring place to believe the worst, I think. I do think that sometimes people...
It does, and I think in this case, people wanted to feel empathetic toward anybody who was suffering from a fire in a holy place, which is why his article got a little bit of drama online, even though it was inaccurate.
Very interesting. Okay, who else? Let's talk about the New York Times, Daniel.
A columnist, Michelle Goldberg, wrote an article essentially supporting BDS, that's the movement to make boycotts, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. Now, a columnist is writing an opinion piece, so she's entitled to her opinion.
Sure.
But she does work for the New York Times. This isn't just someone who wrote in a letter. And, you know, like the old expression goes, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but not to their own facts. And the New York Times has, as a newspaper, has a responsibility to fact-check even opinion pieces. So Goldberg said... that the leaders of BDS make an effort to separate anti-Zionism from anti-Semitism.
Oh.
Now, one could argue about whether it's even possible. For example, Zionism is the idea that Jews deserve self-determination just like every other people in the world. Yes. And if you believe that Jews don't deserve that, but all other people in the world do, then you're treating Jews differently than others, and it's a hard case to make how that isn't anti-Semitic. But even putting that aside for the moment, the BDS leaders frequently say that that they believe that Israel doesn't have a right to exist, that they should destroy Israel, that that there shouldn't be a Jewish state, and they're very clear that that is the purpose of BDS, is to cause those kind of consequences. And so when she says the leaders make an effort to separate this, they really don't. In fact, they do quite the opposite. They make an effort to make it clear that they are really, that they're really strongly against the idea of a Jewish state anywhere in the world in any borders. And then she goes on to say that they deserve to have free speech. In particular, Omar Barghouti, who's one of the founders of BDS, was recently denied a visa to enter the United States. He ironically is an Israeli citizen who studied at the University of Tel Aviv, someone who wants to boycott Israel, lives his whole life here and purchases things here and is in the education system here and advocates boycotting the very university he attended. But he was denied a visa to enter the United States. And the idea that this has anything to do with free speech is preposterous. A boycott against a foreign nation is not free speech. It's a tool of statecraft. A boycott against a foreign nation is like when the U.S. Put a naval blockade around Japan in World War II. It's like the sanctions against Iran. It's something that governments do to choke off countries in order to avoid having to go to war with them in a military way. And that's it. We're not talking about the civil rights movement when you're doing a domestic boycott of a local restaurant or a bus company. A national boycott is a very different thing. And that's not free speech. Barghouti has the right to say anything he wants, and he frequently does appear on American television programs or radio programs remotely, just like I'm doing here with you in South Africa. And he has the right to speak out in Israel and frequently does. We're a country we're arguing is the national sport. But starting a national level boycott against a foreign nation just doesn't count as free speech, and it never has anywhere in the Western world where free speech is respected.
So
the problem with this is these are all facts. Whether this is free speech, it's a question of fact. Whether BDS leaders separate themselves from anti-Semitism is a question of fact. And when somebody writing in the New York Times, who's employed by the New York Times, misstates facts, the New York Times has a responsibility to point that out, even if it's an opinion piece. And they failed in their professional obligations this week.
Gosh. All right. One more story. Can we talk about Roger Waters? Can I play Pink Floyd yet?
Well, I'll tell you what, an irony here is that Roger Waters, as you know, he's terribly anti-Semitic. He, at one of his shows, he floated an enormous helium balloon in the shape of a pig with a Jewish star on it. So he is an unashamedly... unashamed anti-Semite. And yet Pink Floyd is actually very popular here in Israel for one simple reason, which is that it's good music. Even an anti-Semite can produce good music. And there's a really excellent Pink Floyd cover band that did a show here in Israel. And Roger Waters was furious, and he was saying they shouldn't come and perform in Israel, but they did anyway. And so Israelis enjoyed not only listening to Pink Floyd's music, but listening to it from a band that Roger Waters objected to. So it was sort of a double way of sticking it to him. But he had an opinion piece in The Guardian, which is a frequent occurrence with him. He was saying that Madonna should boycott Israel, which is ironic because she has a home here. She spends a lot of time here. She's a big fan. She, as you know, is real into Kabbalah, which she studies here in Israel. And he couches his language in his intolerance in the language of human rights. He pressures other musicians, saying that if you support human rights, you must oppose Israel. But of course, the problem here is that Israelis are humans too, and Israelis also have human rights. And when Israel takes reasonable measures to prevent terrorism, that is in defense of human rights, just of the humans who happen to be Jewish. And that's an area where Roger Waters seems to get himself into trouble. And also, so he was writing about this in The Guardian as usual.
Yeah, but Daniel, I mean, that's why I ask, do people care about the truth? I mean, does anybody step back and say, hold on a second, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East where everybody has rights? I mean, do you think anybody reads that and thinks that? Because, I mean, at what point do we go back to the facts and question what we read?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think there's a little delay. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no worries.
I'm hearing you later than you're talking. I do believe there's a silent majority out there. And that's why people like Roger Waters or Michelle Goldberg writing in the New York Times are really so problematic, because they inform people's worldview. But I'll tell you a story. I was talking to a friend of mine about the events down at the Gaza border where they have these protests, but they're not really protests because people are doing violent things down there. Yeah. And she said to me, you know, I think it's terrible that the Israeli army is shooting at protesters. And I said to her very simply, because my philosophy is you have to reach people where they are. Yeah. And you don't change someone's values, you explain why their values actually do support Israel. I said to her, did you know that some of those protesters were actually firing automatic weapons at the Israeli army. She said, oh my God, I didn't know that. And suddenly her whole view changed because she realized instantly that someone who's firing an automatic weapon at a country's army is not a protester by any sane definition of the word. And the moment she realized that, her whole view of the situation changed. The problem was that the media wasn't mentioning that some of these so-called protesters were firing weapons at an army. And I think that most people, not all people, some people really are stuck on their agenda, but most people, if they start to hear the truth and hear the facts, they will realize based on their own values that they actually support Israel much more than they ever realized they did.
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you very, very much. Daniel Pomerantz, Executive Director of Honest Reporting. Go check them out. Honest Reporting. It's .com, right?
My pleasure. That's honestreporting.com, and we have our Passover fundraiser going on right now.
Oh, wow.
And we would love to have your support.
Okay, go and support them. They do a great job. Great job. Thank you so much, Daniel. And
Chag
Sameach to you and your family.